And now here are some of the letters received at the evening news since our last recording, avoiding the topic of Christmas.
We'll start with a couple which are on the theme of petrol versus electric vehicles. Steve McKinder from Denver writes, "The loudly trumpeted announcement that our county council is intending to install another 40 public electric car charging points in the county sounded like a great idea. Sadly, the reality was they're all going to end up in Norwich, where there is already quite good car charging provision. Whether they're needed at the moment is highly debatable, considering the actual public interest in them is almost insignificant if the pitiful numbers of application for charging licences for householders is to be believed. There were 15 by November and only 11 were actually granted. Do Norfolk County Council bosses imagine these extra charges will trigger some latent interest in purchasing these expensive cars? Are they really anticipating a surge in green cars by strewing charge points like sugar lumps across Norwich to attract the eco horses? Of course they aren't. We're strapped for cash to even put petrol in cars, so stumping up for a whole brand new battery car isn't high on many household agendas currently. With every single county finance service in financial jeopardy and a mooted whopping hike in council tax, I'd suggest this flurry of eco-propaganda is another classic county hall waste of money and time. Fiddling while Rome burns springs to mind. And while I'm moaning, could I point out to NCC that Norfolk isn't just Norwich. Ask someone from Terrington, Harleston, or Thetford. It's a big old county out there beyond Trouse." And then Glyn Linder from Frettenham writes, "I had to smile when I read the headlines reporting on Norfolk County Council's push to install electric car charging points in 46 residential streets in Norwich. I recently approached a driver who was in the process of charging his vehicle in a supermarket car park, who said that he had just spent 40 minutes using the charging point and proudly announced to me that he now had 240 miles travelling available to him. I didn't have the heart to tell him that I had just spent 2 minutes at the petrol station across the road and now had 500 miles on my petrol gauge."
With all the industrial action that has been occurring, there has been plenty of correspondence about the subject of strike action. But why, asks R. King of Royden, is it called industrial action? Loads of strikes this Christmas designed to bring as much chaos as possible. People in the hospitality and retail sector will suffer more than most. Many of whom have lost a lot of money during COVID-19 and face a very uncertain future, not having had full money payout and support of many of the strikers. I do understand that many went to work at the very difficult time in the early part of the pandemic, and I think a special case should be made for the NHS frontline workers. Maybe getting some of the money by diverting the £44,000 to £77,000 per year of the 800 diversity staff managers the NHS have just employed. By the way, why is it called industrial action?
Eleanor Laming from Thorpe St Andrew has written in about her reflections on 2022 and the need to realise about our eco impact. "The defining moment of 2022 was the death of Queen Elizabeth II, which ended a reign of almost indescribable importance in terms of its length, impact, and historical significance. As the grip of COVID started to recede, it was a relief to move back to attending more in-person meetings and travel in the UK with fewer social restrictions. While turmoil and change reigned at national government levels, residents of our nation worked hard to keep services running, helped others in need, and stayed positive. This winter has been extremely difficult for many and will sadly continue to be so in 2023. And the efforts that go on to provide help, often quietly and behind the scenes, are to be applauded. There were moments of hope for the world as COP27 and COP15 were held to examine issues concerning the future of our planet and for humanity. Although progress seems slow, even small breakthroughs are steps forward and must be celebrated. We often do not see the impacts until later. The creation of a vaccine for malaria by scientists at Oxford University was exciting, potentially world-changing news. And so was the step forward in investigations into nuclear fusion. For the first time, the fusion reaction generated more energy than was put in to initiate it, pointing towards the possibility of producing clean energy with no carbon emissions. So what hopes do I have for 2023? That those in government will recognise the efforts put in by people on a daily basis to support society in all kinds of ways, put aside their differences where possible, and work collaboratively and practically to deal with the huge challenges that the future will bring.
And last but not least, Nicola Cordell of Mattershall has also written about her reflections on 2022. And that there's plenty to be positive about in 2023. I have to say that when I look back on 2022, all the negative things come rushing into my mind. Still dealing with COVID, the war in Ukraine, refugees fleeing and some losing their lives at sea, strikes, cost of living crisis, upset in the royal family, the death of the Queen, a government who don't always seem to know whether they're coming or going. Problems arising through climate change. The list seems never ending. Yet in all this turmoil, we still have plenty to be positive about. Communities coming together. The NHS still being there for us, despite what we hear in the press. And I have to finish by mentioning the beauty of nature. Even though we needed to wrap up warm during several days in December, the frosts on the trees and the fields were a beauty to behold. All is not lost. Happy New Year. And that's it for the letters section this week. So back to Paul for some more news.